Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, where we talk politics Iowa style and explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, at the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, it's Valentine's Day night. Happy Valentine's Day night.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Dennis.
Well, we're talking about first of all, how are you doing? I've explained you seem to be doing better.
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Yes. Let's talk about the coronavirus. This is the week that Iowa's changing how it handles the pandemic. The coronavirus disaster emergency proclamation is going to expire on Tuesday. The state is shutting down its online coronavirus dashboard. Tell us what this is all going to mean.
Well, I will be getting my information from Sarah Ann Willett's website, iowacovid19tracker.org, because fortunately she's going to continue to keep that going. But Governor Reynolds has determined that it's time to treat the coronavirus just like the flu and other illnesses. And so that means no dedicated state dashboard and not the same kind of state reporting. There is a weekly state report on the flu, but it's much less detailed. And so I think that the message from the administration seems to be sort of out of sight, out of mind.
Right. The information we have today showed that there were 8,370 new positive cases of the virus in the state over the past 7 days, and that's down from what was reported on Friday. Yes. Number of people hospitalized, also down, but the number of coronavirus-related deaths remained elevated, 172 additional deaths reported last week, and the number of nursing homes with a coronavirus outbreak disturbingly high in Iowa.
Yes. And it's even higher if you look at Sarah Ann Willett's website, because she's counting all of the facilities with at least one case, whereas the state is only counting facilities where at least three residents have tested positive in the last 2 weeks. Again, with respect to the fatalities, remember that when they report these new reported deaths over 1 week, that doesn't mean that all of those people died last week. It means that many of those deaths stretched back to 2.5 months. But what I've been keeping a spreadsheet, and I can tell you that hundreds of Iowans have been dying every month since September, already in January, even though there is a delay, there's quite a lag in reporting. So we don't have nearly the full death toll for January, but at least 500 Iowans died just in the month of January. And that number is going to go up as more deaths are reported as they process more death certificates. So just to put this in perspective, the flu, typically before the pandemic, the flu used to kill about 600 to 700 Iowans a year, depending on the severity of the outbreak, sometimes a little less than 600. So we're talking about just in a little more than a month, the coronavirus killing more people than the flu does in a typical season. So it's really not the flu. It's nothing like the flu. It's still the third leading cause of death in Iowa, and it's looking like we're on track to have that be true for a third year in a row.
We know now that 106 nursing homes in Iowa have an outbreak going on right now as of Monday. Only 33% of nursing home workers have been fully vaccinated and received a booster shot. That is seemingly on the surface a disturbing number.
Yes. I mean, I'm surprised that there are so few with boosters, because it seems like a few months ago, it was more like in the 65 to 70% range of nursing home staff that were fully vaccinated. But I know I've been keeping track of the cases at the Iowa Veterans Home, which is the largest nursing home in the state and a state-run facility. And it just seems like almost every day they are reporting more staff testing positive, and they don't say whether those people were vaccinated or not. So, and some of them may also be reinfections. That seems to be fairly common with the Omicron variant. There are people who maybe thought they had infection-acquired immunity because they got COVID sometime last year, and now they're getting infected again.
Right. 95 cases were reported at the nursing home in Marshalltown last week. It's the seventh coronavirus outbreak at that home, more than any other Iowa care facility. And again, they just can't seem to get over it, primarily because the staff is not vaccinated. 96% of the residents there are said to be vaccinated.
Yes. And in the messages that someone is forwarding to me that are going out to residents, to relatives and guardians, they're emphasizing, don't come to visit your loved one if you're sick. Remember good hand hygiene, please wear a mask. And so it's possible also that visitors are bringing in some of these infections in addition to staff.
Right. Well, there was also word last week that Iowa courtrooms are no longer going to require masks or other face coverings for in-person proceedings. The Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, Susan Christensen, announced that decision Friday. So that's a big deal for the court system.
Yes. In general, the Iowa judicial branch has been a lot more cautious throughout this pandemic than the rest of state government. They had a mask mandate fairly early on, and they kept it in place for quite a long time. They lifted it for a few months after the vaccine became widely available. But then last August, when the Delta variant was causing a big surge in cases and hospitalizations, the judicial branch reinstated a mask requirement for all court-controlled spaces, regardless of your vaccination status. And they kept that going in December. The Chief Justice issued a new order in light of the Omicron variant that kept that mandate in place. But the order that went into effect today, that was issued on Friday, said that with cases on the wane, that they felt that it was time to drop this requirement. However, they did still leave it up to the discretion of individual judges if they feel that it's necessary in certain circumstances to require people in a courtroom to wear a mask. The judges still do have the ability to do that. I don't know how many judges will actually exercise that power.
Let's move from the courtroom to the state legislature. This is funnel week, what's known as funnel week in the legislature, where it's live or die for many of the bills lawmakers have filed. So, Laura, in layman's terms, what is funnel week?
Yes. Well, I will tell you that 8-10 years ago, I used to pay a lot more attention to funnel week than I do anymore. But in theory, funnel week is a way for the legislature to organize their work. Just hundreds and hundreds of bills are introduced every year, and most of them don't become law. And so one way to weed out the things that really have potential and the things that are going nowhere is to have this funnel. So by the end of the funnel week, a bill that does not relate to taxes or spending has to get through at least one full committee in the Iowa House or the Iowa Senate. If it doesn't, then more likely than not, it's dead for the year. Appropriations bills and tax-related bills are exempt from this requirement. They can be introduced very late. But with a few exceptions, most other bills relating to most other topics, if you don't get it through a committee this week, then it's probably going to be dead for the year. Now, so that what happens is that this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there are usually an overwhelming number of committee meetings as they're rushing to get bills introduced or get bills through. And most of those bills won't eventually become law, but just to keep them alive. Now, when I said that I don't follow it as closely as I used to, what I've noticed is in the years of the Republican trifecta that a lot of bills that seem like they were dead earlier in the session or perhaps weren't even introduced earlier in the session, come through very, very late in the game in the last 2 or 3 days of the session and become law. So leadership can do whatever they want. And we often see that there will be some policy bills that don't relate to taxes or spending that are introduced long after these funnel deadlines that become law. So I would never say that something is definitely dead if it doesn't get through funnel week. But in most of the cases, if it's not through a committee by this Friday, it's probably not going to become law.
So it's going to be a busy week indeed, and we know what you're going to be doing this week. I'm watching a lot of online video. Let's talk about what the legislature did do last week and today. Last week, a state house subcommittee advanced a bill that's going to ban mask requirements. It would make businesses, schools, or governmental entities that violate the law liable for any adverse reactions that stem from receiving forced medical treatment. It's one of the Republicans' ways of fighting back against mask mandates of any kind.
Well, and it's so interesting because this pandemic has really flipped the script for a lot of Republicans. I mean, it used to be that Republicans weren't in favor of the government telling business owners how to run their business. And yet we see again and again attempts to say that businesses either that they can't require that employees be vaccinated or now that they can't require that customers wear a mask. And it's really, when you think about it, it is quite a governmental intrusion on a private business operation. So I'm going to be interested to see how hard the business lobby groups fight this one. They were not successful in trying to stop the bill largely banning vaccine passports last year. So we'll just see what happens.
Another bill, one that would ban transgender girls from playing women's sports at Iowa's public and non-public schools, cleared its first legislative hurdle last week, a House subcommittee passing that bill. This is highly controversial. It is highly emotional. And it started last year or perhaps even before. It just doesn't go away.
Yeah, so the governor, late in the legislative session last year, again, long after the funnel week, by the way, the governor mentioned during a Fox News appearance that she wanted to see a bill on her desk that would in her wording, protect girls' sports, but it would ban transgender girls from participating in school sports at the high school or college level. And it really is, it's very controversial. And watching the testimony in the subcommittee, I mean, it's just heartbreaking to hear some of the stories for the people who would be excluded by this bill. There's really no evidence that there have been any problems in Iowa sporting events related to transgender girls participating. It's a very small number of students that we're talking about, but the message that it sends is quite strong. And I noticed looking at the lobbyist declarations that the business lobby groups did not weigh in on this. There have been some other bills, for instance, when bills were introduced last year to try to take away the protections for sexual orientation and gender identity from the Iowa Civil Rights Act, and some corporations and business groups registered against that bill. They have not registered against this transgender sports bill. So I don't know whether that means that they perceive this is a done deal and it's happening and they don't want to be on the losing side. I have heard some speculation that the NCAA might have something to say about it, because there have been other cases where sporting events were moved from states that had passed bills that were perceived to be targeting transgender people. But right now, I mean, this bill, it looks like it's something the governor wants. I do expect that the House Education Committee will take it up this week and approve it just to keep it alive. And then we will have to see how much support it has. But again, the Republicans have a 60-40 majority in the House, so they can afford to lose 9 members of their caucus and still get this thing passed. So I would not bet against this passing.
This is a really high-profile bill, and it has ramifications all across the country, and we are really going to be following this one on Capitol Week.
I wanted to say one more thing, that the Iowa Association of School Boards at the subcommittee, they pleaded with legislators not to pass this because they said this would put school districts in a terrible position of having to choose between complying with state law and federal law. Federal law and the U.S. Supreme Court have basically said that transgender, you can't discriminate against transgender people, that that's a violation of federal law. So this could lead to litigation if it passes.
We'll be following. Meanwhile, last week, a Senate subcommittee passed a bill that would let parents sue school districts in Iowa over books they believe are obscene. It now moves on to the Senate Judiciary Committee. The author of this is Jake Chapman. He's on a rampage against certain books, and he is the author of the bill. He held up a photocopied page of a graphic novel last week and said, and I'm quoting, "I dare KCCI to show these pages." Wow. So this battle is, again, going on strongly now in the state Senate.
And remember, just a few weeks ago, the governor distanced herself a little bit from Senator Chapman's remarks, where he had talked about teachers having a sinister agenda to corrupt children. And she said that she thought that maybe he misspoke and she hoped that he would correct that. And then, as we discussed, the Iowa Senate Majority Leader, Jack Whitaker, had said on his last appearance on Iowa PBS, Iowa Press program, that he didn't think that prosecuting teachers was the right way to go on this. But Jake Chapman was undeterred. He introduced this bill. He spoke at the subcommittee meeting. He didn't serve on the subcommittee, but he spoke at the meeting and he told the Des Moines Register that he wants to introduce an amendment. This bill would talk about an aggravated misdemeanor for distributing what he called hardcore pornography in schools. But he wants to introduce an amendment that would make it a felony on a second offense. So he hasn't given up the idea of prosecuting teachers and librarians for felonies. And again, I mean, I think that there could be some issues with trying to define these books as pornography, because the way Iowa's obscenity law is written right now is it exempts any material that is seen to have a literary or educational value. And some of these books are award-winning books. So you can take certain passages or images out of context from a book, but it's very different from, say, a pornographic movie that doesn't really have any literary value and certainly doesn't have a lot of educational value. These are mostly memoirs and coming-of-age stories, and they are relevant to the experiences of a lot of teenagers.
So what do you think? Does this thing have legs in the Senate and in the House?
Well, I think that if he's been able to introduce it, if he's talking about an amendment, I mean, the leadership doesn't usually allow votes on amendments that they don't think they have the votes to pass. And so this may be something that he thinks is important enough. He's been talking about it and highlighting it. If you look at his Facebook page, most of the posts on his Facebook page just are about this one issue. So this is clearly his top priority. And it could be that his colleagues have decided that they're going to let him push this thing through. That doesn't necessarily mean it would get through the Iowa House. But right now, I'm not betting against it getting through the Iowa Senate. They have, again, a 32-18 majority. So they can do almost whatever they want.
And they have a 60-40 majority Republicans do in the House as well.
Right. But if this is something that the governor, if this is something that the governor feels goes a little bit too far, it's easy to imagine the House passing some different kind of bill that is more oriented toward making it easier for parents to challenge curriculum material or books in school libraries, but without the added provision of being able to prosecute teachers and librarians.
Right. It is 17 and a half after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style, and how it's affecting all of us. Another bill that would have impacted Iowa schools. It would have required schools to put video cameras in every classroom. That one died last week in the House. This one had all kinds of privacy issues as well as other things, and yet it was about to be considered.
Well, I was laughing when this bill was introduced, because generally when I'm trying to decide which bills to cover and not cover, I look at who introduced the bill and I look at whether anyone in leadership introduced the bill or whether it was a committee chair that introduced the bill. And in this case, it was neither. Norlin Momsen, just one member. He didn't have any co-sponsors on the bill. And so I looked at this and I figured this thing is not going anywhere. And I didn't write about it. Well, of course, then many other people wrote about it. It even got some national media coverage. So it just goes to show that just because something doesn't have legs doesn't mean that it might not be newsworthy. But that in the end, this just didn't have any real support. The subcommittee meeting ended up not happening, but the chair of the subcommittee said that he would not have voted to advance this bill. As you mentioned, lots of privacy issues. You have to sign a consent form to allow the school to photograph your children. But just imagine allowing a live stream from your child's classroom every day. And I think the sponsor was saying that he would have the camera focused on the teacher. But, teachers move around classrooms, especially in elementary schools. Kids move around quite a bit. And so it just didn't seem very workable. Also, it would have been tremendously expensive to put cameras and live streams in every classroom. And then there's the question of how many parents have time to sit online all day watching what's going on in their kids' class.
All part of the Republican efforts, though, across the country, and we see this in state after state, to put education in the forefront for the upcoming midterm elections here, put educators on the defensive. This is part of what we're seeing across the nation.
Yes, it is. And I think that, again, the Virginia election results from November, that was a message to Republicans that this is an issue that they can run on and win on, put schools front and center. It's a way they perceive that they can win back some of the suburban voters who have drifted away from the Republican Party in recent years. And by the way, Jake Chapman is going to be running for re-election in a largely suburban district that he hasn't had that kind of electorate before. So that does seem to be influencing where they're going with so many different bills aimed at education and especially aimed at parental, giving parents more control over what happens in the schools.
Indeed. Meanwhile, more on education. Iowa lawmakers agreed today, Monday, as we go live on Monday night, to increase state education funding for the next budget year. The Senate is matching the House and Governor Reynolds by passing a bill to increase state aid by 2.5%. So they've reached agreement. It's going to the governor and she's going to sign it.
Yes, definitely. And this is, the Senate started out with a low ball of 2.25%, but it wasn't hard to see where it was going, the 2.5%. This is the state aid that goes, the per pupil state aid that goes to school districts. And a lot of education advocates were hoping for more. Of course, the state has a record budget surplus right now. And so people were saying that they could easily afford 4% or 6%. For about 10 years now, the increase in state aid to K-12 schools has not kept up with the rate of inflation or rising costs for those schools. And some of these costs, the schools just, they have no control over things like transportation costs for buses and certain salary increases. They can't reduce those. And so if the state aid only goes up by 2.5%, then they're going to have to either increase property taxes or they're going to have to cut staff and programming to make up the slack. And that's what's been happening in many school districts. across the state. They've just been cutting, although the total dollar amount that the state allocates has increased. It just hasn't increased by enough to keep up with the rate of inflation. And one other wrinkle this year is that the state, the per pupil state aid is based on last year's enrollment. And in some districts, last year's enrollment was a little bit depressed due to the pandemic. There were some parents who kept their kids homeschooled that year, but they have them back in public schools this year. But that's this year's enrollment is not how they're calculating these numbers. So that's another way in which this funding may fall short of what schools need.
Let's zoom through the next few topics. We have about 7 minutes left here. A state Senate subcommittee and a Senate committee approved a bill last week that's going to require most gas stations in Iowa to sell gasoline blends that are 15% ethanol. The bill previously had been passed by the state house, so this one appears to be on a fast track.
It does, and I'm really surprised because, like I said, last year it didn't even come to a vote because there was so much opposition from some of the business lobby groups, but it just seems like the trucking groups and the gas retailers have really lost this battle. The bill passed the House, as we discussed last week, 82 to 10. So I think it's going to probably sail through the Senate, and this is one that the governor wants to sign. She views this as a way to support agriculture and the biofuels industry.
Right. Senate is also moving a proposal to cut jobless benefits to 12 weeks. The governor had proposed ending benefits at 16 weeks. So this is really going to impact those without jobs.
Yes. I mean, I think this bill in this form, it will probably get through the Senate Labor Committee and possibly the Senate. But I imagine when it goes to the House, if they do anything like this, it would be more like what the governor is proposing and not something that's more severe than what the governor is proposing. Last year's bill that would have cut unemployment benefits in several ways got through the full Senate, but never came to a vote in the House because they didn't have 51 votes to pass it. So I really don't see the House passing something to cut benefits to 12 weeks.
We will see. Meanwhile, a bipartisan Senate Ethics Committee voted unanimously to dismiss a complaint which alleged that a Republican state senator, Dan Zumba, used his influence to gain environmental approval for a cattle project in which his son-in-law is a partner. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I've seen this show before where people file ethics complaints against Iowa House or Iowa Senate members, and almost all of the time these get dismissed. And that this was no exception. And the Iowa House and Senate Ethics Committees have really narrow jurisdictions. It has to be related to conduct that occurred when somebody was a senator. And in this case, it has to be something that happened within the last 3 years. And many of the alleged actions by State Senator Dan Zumba occurred before January of 2019. So that was one of the issues that the two of the Democrats on the Ethics Committee said that they were troubled by some of what happened, but that it was outside their jurisdiction because it had happened before January 2019. And the other thing is that the jurisdiction of this ethics committee, it has to be something that directly benefits, personally benefits the senator professionally. And in this case, it was something that benefited his son-in-law, among other people. So, I mean, a layperson might look at that and say that's unethical for a state legislator to do something to benefit their son-in-law or some other relative. But the way the ethics rules are written in the Senate, if it doesn't personally benefit the senator himself, then it's not really a violation.
Gotcha. All right. Word that 20 Democratic lawmakers in the legislature set to file legislation that would ban the construction of large livestock confinements for 5 years. This is a measure that has repeatedly failed to gain support in Iowa, which is the nation's biggest pork producing state. It will go nowhere this year. So why are they doing this?
Well, I think this is the most Democratic co-sponsors that I've seen in a while. I think they're trying to show every year that they're building a little more momentum. And today, a coalition of a couple of dozen groups, including Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement and Food and Water Watch, they went to the State House to rally for this bill. The lead sponsor was Art Stade of Cedar Rapids. He is a strong environmental voice in the House Democratic Caucus. I think they just want to keep this topic as part of the conversation. I think even if Democrats were in control of the legislature, it would be really difficult to get authority behind this idea. But the state has made it very difficult since the 1990s. Counties can't regulate these confined animal feeding operations through zoning laws. So really, if any regulation is going to happen, it would have to be at the state level. And that's why they keep introducing these bills year after year, even though they're not going to go anywhere in the committees.
Also last week, a Senate subcommittee advanced legislation that would limit the amount of money the state and its counties can pay for timber pasture and cropland for use for public parks and other amenities. Let's download that.
Well, this would make it very difficult to add to county conservation areas and state parks. And as you know, I like to look at the lobbyist declarations, and I looked at the lobbyist declarations for this bill. A big coalition of environmental groups, but not only environmental groups, also the Iowa Association of Realtors, the Iowa Chamber Alliance, they are against this. A number of local governments are against it. And guess who's registered for it? Nobody, no group is registered for this bill. And so that is always very suspicious. I think behind the scenes, I would guess that agricultural interests are pushing this. They want to keep land in crop production. They don't want farmers to sell their property to have it be more habitat and conservation areas. But really, again, you know, why would the state government tell landowners how they can dispose of their property in this way? And at the subcommittee, the testimony, even though it cleared the subcommittee, and I expect it will get through the full committee, basically hardly anybody was speaking in favor of it. And one of the people speaking against it was David Oman, who was a former chief of staff to Governor Bob Rae. And he essentially said, if Governor Rae were alive, he'd be here and telling you not to do this.
90 seconds left. State Senate Democratic leader Zach Walls said he's going to seek a second term, and he's going to run in Senate District 43. Is he going to have a tough time, or is he going to skate?
No, his district got a lot easier during the redistricting. His old district included a part of Johnson County and all of Cedar County. And Cedar County is one that used to be a real swing county, and it's really trended Republican the last 5 or 10 years. So his new district doesn't include Cedar County anymore. It's much more centered on Coralville, includes part of North Liberty. And those areas, of course, have been trending heavily Democratic. So he is the Senate minority leader, and I don't think that he has anything to worry about. I'm not aware of a declared Republican candidate in his district, but even if there is one, I don't think that person is going to give Zach Walls any trouble.
All right. About 45 seconds left. What do you expect this week? This is, again, final week. Lots of things going to go on. What are you going to focus on?
Just grab bag. I'm just going to be looking. I do expect that transgender sports bill to get taken up by a committee and passed. I think, again, the bill, the land use bill that we just talked about, probably will go through full committee. And so I think it'll just be a big rush, a mad dash toward the end of the week, and always enjoy over the weekend looking at the coverage in the Des Moines Register and the Cedar Rapids Gazette of what got through and what didn't.
And Jake Chapman's bill might be moving on, right?
I think so, yes. I would expect it to move on.
We are going to have a lot to follow, and we will be back next week to follow it. It is Valentine's Day, and we're near the end of the show. So again, I want to wish you, Laura, a very happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day to you too, Dennis.
I happened to meet my future wife on Valentine's Day when I was a very young reporter out in California. Maybe I'll tell that story sometime. We're still married. We are out of time now. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHY Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here in this time slot next week, we promise, when we'll have the latest on what's going on politically inside and outside the state capitol. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.